This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is BFM's Morning Run. I'm Koo Soo Chung with Wong Shao Ning and Tan Chen Lee. It is 7:06 on the 29th of April 2022. In the meantime, let's recap how global markets closed yesterday.
Pretty green, actually, all across. US market, Dow up 1.9%, S&P 500 up 2.5%, Nasdaq up 3%, Asian markets, Nikkei up 1.8%, Hang Seng up 1.7%, Shanghai Composite up 0.6%, STI up 0.4%, FBM KLCI up 0.7%. I've been saying up and no downs.
All green colour.
That's right.
Yes. So to discuss these issues and other economic matters, we now turn to Carlos Casanova, the senior economist at UBP. Carlos, let's start with the first quarter US GDP, which printed a decline of 1.4% versus consensus estimates of a 1% advance. What are your thoughts on this print? And in particular, what did you think of US domestic demand?
Yeah, well, we are seeing some degree of sustained demand in the US economy. In fact, we do expect things to slow down in the coming months, but our house view remains a little bit more sanguine about economic activity in the U.S. due to some strength in the labor market. So that should continue to pan out in the coming months, translating into stronger domestic consumption figures and hopefully some wage growth. But of course, like everyone else, we are acknowledging some degree of downside risks and trying to understand not just what is happening immediately, but what how things are going to turn in case the Fed does implement those very aggressively priced in interest rate hikes this year.
Carlos, which begs the question, what is your expectation for the next quarter? Are we heading for a technical recession if there's another quarter of decline?
We are not expecting a technical recession quite yet. But there is an increasing likelihood that this could be the case, especially, depending on what the impact of the rate hikes on the general economic activity is.
According to some of the research notes, it points out that the US GDP growth, actually the decline came from the trade deficits, which saw exports running high and imports running low. And of course, when they looked also at domestic demand, consumer spending still grew 2.7% and non-residential investment expanded 9.2%. So in terms of the local economy, that shows some strength. What were your views on that?
Well, it shows some strength on certain sectors of the economy. I think we all know that, like in many parts of the world, including in Asia, Malaysia, I'm in Hong Kong, so in Hong Kong, certainly it's also the case. We are seeing very hot property prices and a lot of activity on the investment front over there. But there is an increasing concern amongst investors that the Fed, might be worried about the impact of this on inflation, and this is something that they can control, right? So in case we see, it could very quickly turn into a bubble burst kind of situation. So I would have liked to see activity spread out more evenly, but there are certain pockets that are leading, and it's certainly very bubbly at the moment.
You mentioned Hong Kong, and let's talk about it a little bit. So Hong Kong has loosened travel restrictions, but is it a case of too little, too late? And can the capital and labor flight that took place during the last year be quantified in terms of impact on GDP growth and employment rates?
There's a lot of questions packed into one. Let me try to, yeah. So for the Hong Kong economy, they are starting to loosen somewhat travel restrictions. It is a step in the right direction, but of course, it is lagging significantly behind other parts of the world. So I am joining you today from Singapore, where things are pretty much normal. And I do believe that, a marginal easing of travel restrictions are unfortunately not going to lead to a massive inflow of inbound passengers, be that travelers or, people that are looking to move into Hong Kong from other parts of the world or other parts of Asia at the moment. So I do expect that it will still take at least another 6 months before we see that in Hong Kong, and then together with this stricter, in relative terms, stance towards COVID, we are also going to see the strongest pace of policy tightening in Hong Kong, because remember, the Monetary Authority of Hong Kong needs to follow the Fed. All other central banks in Asia will not have pressure to follow the Fed exactly in its tapering journey in 2022-2023. But the Hong Kong Monetary Authority is required to, because they have a currency board. They peg the Hong Kong dollar against the US dollar, and so they follow the Fed. And so the combination of this tighter COVID stance, net population drain, and very quickly increasing borrowing costs, unfortunately mean that we are going to see mounting headwinds to growth in the Hong Kong economy and downside pressure on housing prices, which together could be quite a bad for activity.
Okay, Carlos, we have a question on the ringgit. It's seen quite sharp declines against the US dollar, falling over 4% on year to date. Why is the ringgit so weak?
So honestly, part of the answer is that the US dollar is very strong. We are seeing weakness over the board amongst all Asian currencies, including currencies that we thought would benefit from an environment of rising energy prices, namely the Aussie dollar. It's also down slightly year to date, which is surprising. So a big factor is that, of course, currencies across the region have been depreciating to various degrees, depending on how large their rate differential with the US is. The US 10-year is now, heading towards the 3 to 3.5% range. So there are economies in the region that have larger negative real differentials with the US, and that would, erode the carry advantage of these currencies, and so it puts depreciatory pressure on the currencies. In the case of Malaysia, we do have one of the larger real rate differentials with the US, so that naturally is going to put more pressure on the currency. It's not the currency that has depreciated the most. We've seen more pressure, in particular on the Japanese yen, and the Chinese yuan has been on the news, but it's down -3% year to date. So slightly doing slightly better than the ringgit for the time being, although it might change soon. But I think this rate differential and the fact that there is an incentive to sell the currency is what is driving more depreciation relative to some of the other peers in the region.
All right, Carlos, thank you ever so much for your time. That was Carlos Casanova, senior economist at UPP. Just in terms of the ringgit, one thing that we didn't really discuss earlier was the fact that Dato' Noor Shamsiah, in fact, Tan Sri Noor Shamsiah, has replied to, I think, the AEGIS queries on the ringgit decline. And she mentioned that Bank Negara is actively managing the risk to the currency. And what they're trying to do is to make sure that the gyrations are not too wild.
Yeah, keep it within a certain tight range, right? That's what everybody wants, whether you're an exporter, forex trader.
Yeah.
Enables you to plan. The issue is when currencies go out of whack and there's a very wide range, then businesses struggle in terms of, how much should they buy and how much should they sell forward also. And then that dilemma is really real. But let's switch to results. Some interesting names. The story of two A's, which have very different outcomes. First off is Apple. Of course, their shares rose over 2% in extended trading. Revenue in first quarter grew by nearly 9% year-on-year too. Only $97.2 billion.
Yeah, the juggernaut known as Apple. They basically beat on every single thing, with the exception of wearables, which only missed by a slight tad. They announced a $90 billion cash buyback program, $90 billion, right?
Is it bigger than our GDP?
Our reserves are 116. So they're spending nearly that on just buying back their own shares.
Can you imagine globally,
it's
Apple
crazy.
Phones sold $50.6 billion.
$51 billion.
Yeah, value. There are that many iPhones out there in just a quarter.
Well, I'm holding one of it.
Yeah, this is basically the best non-holiday quarter in history. And this is in the middle of a slowdown in America.
That's right.
Go figure.
Yes. And service revenue jumped 17% year-on-year to $19.82 billion. It's the highest ever service revenue that Apple has ever seen.
And not forgetting Mac computers, because it also went up 15% year-on-year to $10.4 billion. But however, iPad business actually decreased, with sales down 2% year-on-year, maybe because of new models not so inviting, perhaps? It depends on consumer sentiments on this.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize, but Apple's, you know, the majority of Apple's revenue is about 50 to 55% of their revenue comes from actually iPhones. And that is the one product that they cannot fail on.
Yeah, so 37 buys on Wall Street, 10 holds, one sell consensus target price for this stock, $193, currently trading at $163, still the darling of the street. And very quickly, the one that wasn't the darling was Amazon. Their shares fell by as much as 10% in extended trading on Thursday after the company issued a bleak revenue forecast and reported a loss on its investment on Rivian.
Rivian. However, revenue at Amazon actually increased 7% year-on-year to $116 billion during the first quarter. And this is compared with the 44% expansion in the year ago.
And for those who maybe need a bit of a memory jolt, Rivian is the EV manufacturer and their share price has plummeted more than 50% in the first 3 months of this year. Hence the write-down.
Yeah, headed by Robert Scaringe. Amazon missed on both first quarter operating income as well as second quarter net sales. So that's interesting. But they also, I think it was in some way saved by Amazon Web Services. So that was a good light in the tunnel for them. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.